The spirit of performance is what defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Hoosier Huddle podcast. I'm your host, Sammy Jacobs. I'm coming to you live from Cleveland on top of the Cleveland Clinic Hospital. And we'll be joined by co-host TJ Inman here shortly. We're talking IU Michigan State, the battle for the old brass platoon. We'll go over keys to the game, players to watch, matchups to watch, and our predictions. And TJ will be along with us here in a second. TJ, how are you?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Good. All right, we have a better connection than on Monday. But anyway, TJ, we're breaking down Indiana, Michigan State. Injuries are going to play a big one, big factor in this game as well. You know, we've been putting in our previews. We do not know the status of Dan Feeney and Demetri Camille, but we do know that Michigan State will be missing at least one starting linebacker John Reschke?
Reschke
and Riley Bulla is listed as day-to-day. He missed last week's game, and on the telecast they said that he – it might be a multiple-week injury. So they might be down two starting linebackers, and I think that's going to play a big part of this game on Saturday.
Well, John Reschke was really, really good. Well, first, he missed their opening game. And for those that don't know, he's a starting interior linebacker. Michigan State's linebackers, their middle linebackers in particular, play a huge role in their defense. So if they're without both Bulla and Reschke, that's going to be a huge blow to them. If they get Bulla back, you know, he's kind of the signal caller for their defense. I think that they will be able to kind of mitigate the loss of Reschke if they have at least one of those guys in there. It really helps. But Reschke missed the Furman game, their opener, with an injury, and then he came back, played against Notre Dame, played really well, had 8 or 9 tackles, had an interception. He was really good in that game, and then he was injured in the second half against Wisconsin. It's an ankle injury. He's going to be out multiple weeks. It's a big loss for them. They've got a couple of guys that they, you know, they like the talent of, apparently, but Andrew Dell and Byron Bulla, yes, another Bulla family member for Michigan State. He's the younger brother of Riley, so he can step in there as well. They're both sophomores, limited game experience. It's going to be a downgrade if either one of them come into the game for Bulla or Reschke, and a big loss if they're both out. No doubt about that.
Yeah, and you know, it's this game, I think Indiana opened up as 9-point underdogs. I saw the line was at 8 the other day, and then I think it went down to 7. So, you know, this is a game that a lot of people have Michigan State, who's coming in at 16th in one poll, 17th in another. You know, that a lot of people put Michigan State on upset alert. It's an 8 o'clock game in Bloomington. Both teams are coming off a loss, so they should, you know, be wanting to rebound. You're going to get probably Michigan State's best effort. They don't want to start the Big Ten season 0-2. Especially with the aspirations they had coming into the season, to where, you know, they get Michigan and Ohio State at home. You know, they have probably the easiest path to a Big Ten East title in terms of scheduling. But, you know, they're now sitting at 2-1, losing to Wisconsin at home, getting, you know, it was manhandled. It was 30-6. This wasn't, you know, Wisconsin-Michigan State game of recent past where, you know, it came down to a Hail Mary at the end or a block punt in the Big Ten championship game, things like that. So you bet your bottom dollar that Michigan State's going to come in here angry. And, you know, we've seen it before with Indiana. After a stinker, they usually come out and play their best ball. You saw it a couple of years ago in 2014 when they lost at Bowling Green, a game that they should have won, and then come back the next week all but written off and beat Missouri on the road against the top 20 team for Kevin Wilson's signature victory. And then, you know, last year coming off of Rutgers, everybody thought, including us, thought that was, you know, a season ender and a potential, you know, era ender for Kevin Wilson. But he came back, put together good games against Iowa, Michigan, and then, you know, took the show on the road to beat Maryland and Purdue to get to those six wins. So, you know, they're give them credit. They're very resilient. They usually play their best football after a loss, and I think you're going to get a good Big Ten game out of both of these teams, and hopefully, you know, the crowd shows up. It's an 8 o'clock game. You don't get many of those in Bloomington, especially in Big Ten play. I think the last one was in 2012 for the Big Ten schedule against Ohio State. But, you know, take it while you can. This is a primetime game against a top 20 team, and hopefully the fans come out and support the team. On that note, TJ, I do want to say we are having our Hoosier Huddle tailgate on Saturday. We'll be in the purple lots. I tweeted out a map of where we are at. We are behind the practice fields in the purple lot, and we'll have food. It's hot dogs, hamburgers, and brats. There'll be beverages. And some other goodies. So please come out. I believe we are starting at, you know, it's slated to start at noon. Go till about 7:30. We'll all head over to the walk, hopefully, and then you know, I'll probably head into the game around 6:30, 7 o'clock. But we'd love to see you guys out there. It's a good group of people, and just to talk football, talk about the other games, talk about this game, talk about where IU is. And we're expecting to have a nice group there as well. So I just wanted to put that out. Everybody is welcome. So please, you know, stop by either, you know, for a while or for 2 minutes. We'd love to talk football with you. So anyway, back to the game, TJ. You know, let's go over some keys to the game. You know, to me, I think the first key to the game is an obvious one. You know, it's not as obvious to score more points than Michigan State, but it's almost as obvious. Indiana is to take care of the ball. And that, you know, starts with Richard Lego coming off of 5 interceptions. He's got to make better decisions. Receivers got to make more competitive plays on the ball, and coaches have to make better play calls. But if Indiana could cut down on the turnovers, you know, going against Michigan State and having 0 turnovers is tough sledding, but you can't have 5. If you could limit it to 1, maybe 2, I think Indiana has a real shot.
Yeah, well, I think that is definitely the first key, and I would throw in penalties as well, just kind of a cleaner game overall. In my notes, I've got cutting out costly mistakes, and I think it goes for both teams. Michigan State, they've been a little bit uncharacteristically sloppy. It really hurt them against Wisconsin. They turned it over 4 times. It was 3 interceptions by Tyler O'Connor and 1 fumble that was recovered by Wisconsin. And then Wisconsin had a pretty huge defensive touchdown on a long return by Michael Russo. So in their opener, they had 120 yards of penalties. Committed 2 turnovers against Furman. They cleaned things up against Notre Dame, winning the turnover battle by 2, but then last week it was, you know, losing the turnover battle 4-2 against Wisconsin. And, you know, really, you look at the stats in that game, and Michigan State, they were really bad on third down, and they had the turnovers, including Wisconsin's defense scoring a touchdown. But you know, they were able to, yardage-wise, they actually were right there with Wisconsin. They're both right around 320. So that was an interesting stat line. And then the Indiana stats last week as well were very interesting, where you have, you know, so much yardage, particularly through the air, but the five turnovers, you know, that it just, they're absolutely killer, and they proved fatal for Michigan State, and they did the same for Indiana. You know, it's Michigan State's deficit was much bigger, but, you know, the turnovers were such that it turned it from a very competitive game early on to giving Wisconsin a big edge that they were able to hold on to relatively easily. So I think that is kind of the first thing for me, is the turnovers and penalties, just those costly. It's easy to call them self-inflicted. I mean, Wake Forest did make some plays, but and then, you know, one or two of the penalties I thought were kind of phantom calls, but those are wounds that, particularly when you're going against a team like Michigan State that typically does not beat themselves. It was not the case last week, but typically they're a pretty disciplined unit that's not going to beat themselves, and you have very little margin for error to begin with when you're going up against the top 20 opponents. So Indiana has to do a better job of taking care of the ball. And for me, it takes me to a second key. One way to do that is finding better balance. There was no balance to speak of last week. There are multiple reasons for it. One, the absence of Dan Feeney and Demetri Camille. Like we said, we don't know the status of those two, so it's hard to say whether or not that's going to be improved. You know, Kevin Wilson mentioned that he thought Brandon Knight did a very adequate job at right tackle, and that it wouldn't have really been any different to what Camille provided at that position. You know, I don't know enough about right tackle play to dispute that, so I'll take him on his word there, but there's no doubt that missing Dan Feeney at right guard, he's irreplaceable within this program right now. And that would be the case for 99% of the programs around the country. Losing a player the caliber of Dan Feeney, that does as much for the offensive line and the overall offensive scheme as Dan Feeney does, is going to have an impact, particularly on the running game, where Indiana does so much in the running game with him and what he can do. So that's a big one, a big reason why. And then Wake Forest's front deserves some credit for Indiana's struggles with the run as well. So you know, you look at what can Indiana do that's going to – IU ran the ball 32 times, threw it 47. So, you know, they strove for balance. It's just the results weren't there. They only had 115 yards, an average of only 3.6 yards per rush, while Richard Legault, you know, threw for almost 500 yards. Now, eventually, Wake Forest was able to intercept five of those passes, as we know. I think you can cut down some of your likelihood of having mistakes in the passing game, and I think increase the effectiveness of the passing game when you're able to run the ball. It's no secret that if you can run the ball well, you're going to be able to maybe develop a play-action game, or, you know, force the secondary to creep up a little bit and try to help out in the running game, which opens up opportunities for receivers. And I think Indiana's receivers are good enough that if the running game is at all effective, they're going to be able to beat their opponent one-on-one against almost anybody in the country. I liked what I saw enough from Ricky Jones, Mitchell Page, and Nick Westbrook now. We know what we have with those guys, I feel like, and we know that they're very capable of beating their opponent one-on-one. And if the running game can be effective and the Hoosiers can have some balance, that's really going to help out Richard Legault not have to throw 47 times. I think ideally you'd look for something like, I don't know, a 60-40 run-pass split, maybe a 55-45, but I don't think you want to be throwing 15 more times than you run it. It is going to be difficult because Michigan State has a very strong run defense. So far, Furman had 2.6 yards per carry, Notre Dame 2.3 yards per carry, and they were playing from behind much of that game, so they didn't try to run all that much, but still, 2.3 is really stout. And then Wisconsin only averaged 3 yards per carry on 41 attempts. They've got Malik McDowell and Demetrius Cooper that are really disruptive on the defensive front. And then, you know, Reschke and Bola and the rest of their linebacker and core, Ed Davis as well, they're hoping to have him play more of a role. He's a sixth-year guy that is coming back from injury. They're working him back slowly. This will be his third game on Saturday. So it's a very good run defense, and I'm kind of curious, what do you think Indiana, let's assume that Dan Feeney and Demetric Camille are able to play on Saturday. You know, we'll be optimistic. We'll hope for the best and assume the best and say they're able to play. So beyond getting those two guys back, what do you think Indiana can do to be more effective in the run game? Because it wasn't amazing against Ball State either.
No, and you know, Ball State now leads the nation in sacks, I believe. So, you know, credit to them too. Anthony Winbush is really good. But in terms of like run-pass balance, I think getting guys to the edge and getting Mike Majet and Devontae Williams and Cole Guest the ball a little bit more. And, you know, you look at plays and you know, passive run plays, they need to run a few more of those screens, which are basically extended handoffs, but count as pass plays. Because as you've pointed out many times, and you know, Mike Majet is really good at taking those screens and moving upfield. Now, he had one against Wake Forest where he got a little impatient and ran up the backside of his blocker and didn't let him block, where, you know, he got 7 yards. But, you know, if he was a little bit more patient or his blocks were set up, he might have gotten, you know, 15 to 20 yards and may have taken it in for a touchdown. But to me, I think that getting guys – limiting Devine Redding's carries a little bit will be helpful. He just does not have the explosiveness that these other guys have to hit the holes hard, and especially against good run defenses where the holes aren't there for long. You know, Redding is a nice back. He's a nice guy to give you, you know, 15 to 20 carries. But I think they need to mix in Majet, Devontae Williams, and if Cole Guest is healthy, get Cole Guest in there, because he's, you know, his burst, you know, one missed tackle and he might be going to the house. So I think having those three guys touch the ball a little bit more should help. And you know, I know Tyler Natee is a running back and scored a touchdown. He was playing out of the Wildcat, or as I've been calling it, the Big Bacon Package. For that touchdown. So if you take out Tyler Natee, Indiana's running backs have zero touchdowns this year through three games, and that's not good. This is where they're missing, you know, a home run threat like Tevin Coleman and Jordan Howard, who could run through tackles and punish people and really get yards when yards weren't there. So
yeah,
I think getting these other guys –
the explosive plays have all been in the passing game, really. They've all been in the passing game so far, which is kind of not what we've seen. And I'm not just going to limit it to Howard and Coleman, because we've seen some longer runs by Devine Redding, and it hasn't happened yet this season. But so do we know – I know that Kevin Wilson did not mention it on Monday. I don't know if he mentioned anything at any other point this week, or if anything was said post game. Do we know anything about Cole Guest's availability?
No, unfortunately, I was not able to be in Bloomington this week. I from what I've read from the quotes, I don't think anybody asked the question, and nobody.
Right.
Nobody has, you know, brought it up, and Kevin Johns yesterday probably is not answering injury questions. But if you look at the, depth chart, and I hate to do that,
yeah, it's still not
under the kick returner. But you never know. So hopefully it was just a minor ankle thing. It'll be, you know, is he out for warm-ups? Is his ankles taped? Or are his ankles taped and all that stuff? So, you know, we'll see going into that game. I think he's a vital part. I think he's a big play waiting to happen, whether it's this week or next week or a few weeks down the road. He's a guy who's turned into a nice little, you know, I don't want to say, you know, third down back, but he's a nice little scat back with a lot of burst and could make things happen in the open field. And if he breaks a tackle or a guy misses a tackle, he could get big yardage out of that. And I'd like to see him continue on kickoffs as well, because, you know, he takes the ball and he explodes out of the end zone and can make things happen. Whereas, you know, some of these other guys, you know, either dance in the hole at running back or, you know, are not as explosive on kick return. So I think, you know, having a more of a run pass balance, getting those safeties to play up a little bit, and not double teaming receivers or playing bracket coverage on receivers, just forcing them to do both things. You can't become one dimensional. You know, it happened last year against Rutgers, where IU got out to a big game, couldn't really run the ball that well consistently, and they ended up passing the ball a lot, throwing a couple interceptions, extending the game, and letting Rutgers back in. But, you know, having a consistent run game, you don't have to run for 300 yards, but if you could average, you know, over 4.5, 5 yards a carry, and get the ball to your running backs 30, 35 times, I think they'll be fine. The next key to the game, TJ, I think, you know, special teams and cleaning that up has got to be a priority. He's now had two kicks blocked that has cost your team points in the first 3 weeks. He had a blocked punt that was recovered for a touchdown against Ball State, and the block kick last week against Wake Forest, where the most concerning thing is guys are coming off the edge unblocked. And, you know, if it's designed that way, then you got to find a new special teams coach. But to me, it's more of a communication error, and somebody's got to tell these edge guys, hey, you got to block that guy, you got to block this guy. And if you don't know what's going on, take that timeout, because IU cannot afford to make those mistakes against a team like Michigan State and hope to survive.
That's accurate. We don't know, like you say, we don't know if that's by design, if it was communication error, if it was foreign assignment, if it was mental mistake, whatever the case, you can't have untouched rushers coming in on special teams. Those are big momentum changing plays and, you know, scoreboard impacting plays. So it's intangible stuff. I mean, when you are able to block a kick and prevent an opponent from scoring points, it's a big shot in the team's arm. Plus it's a bit demoralizing for the team that has it blocked, and it's obviously keeping points off the scoreboard. So it's just as good as another turnover. It doesn't count as an official one. Indiana just had the 5, but you could really look at it as having a 6 with having a field goal blocked. So that is something to – plus, I mean, you feel good about Griffin Oak's ability to hit the kick, and you hate to not have them get the opportunity to do so because it gets blocked. So you got to clean that up, and it's just another thing that last week was just, I think, sloppy is kind of a good word for it. You know, you have the block kick, the turnovers, the penalties, particularly on one drive at a costly time, and it just ended up being a sloppy performance that you cannot replicate if you hope really to win any Big Ten game, but particularly one against a team like Michigan State. So hopefully, like you said, it's the resilience program under Kevin Wilson that they usually do not have two bad weeks in a row. Although, you know, last week, it's so weird. I have so many conflicting feelings about last week's game because there was so much to be positive about, but then ultimately it's a sour taste and a sour memory because of all the negative things that happened and then ultimately the result. So it feels kind of weird to call it a you know, a really poor performance last week when there was quite a bit of positive to take from it. But whereas Michigan State, they're looking at it as, you know, this is a program that does not lose back-to-back games very often.
Last time they lost one is, I think, in November of 2012.
When they went 7-6 that year. And since then, they've really been lights out at the program. So they do not lose back-to-back very often. Plus, you look at the history of this quote-unquote rivalry, which, you know, Michigan State fans, if you look at their, you know, their message board, their fan sites, this is not really a rivalry to them right now, and I can't blame them. I think in basketball, they view Indiana and Michigan State as rivals right now, but in football, they don't see it that way. They've won 7 in a row. They've won 16 of the past 18. Indiana very rarely keeps them under 42 points. I mean, they have 6 in the past 7 years. They've been above 42. You know, when you win 16 of 18 against somebody and 7 in a row, yeah, there can be a rivalry trophy associated with the game. But to the team that keeps winning, you know, they've got a lot bigger fish to fry than a quote-unquote rivalry with IU. So, you know, you look at the history of Mark D'Antonio and his program's performance after a loss, the history of this, you know, series with Indiana of, you know, I'll say recent past. But then you look at how well Indiana does after a loss, typically under Kevin Wilson. You look at the positives that you can take from last week and say, well, you know, it's bad turnover luck. And by the way, I mentioned that on Monday, and the number was done on this on Football Study Hall associated with SB Nation. Those stats indicate that Wake Forest, with the number of passes they defended, should have expected to have 2 interceptions. They got 5. So they got 3 interceptions more than you would expect with the number of passes they defended. That resulted in 19 points of turnover luck. I mean, that's an incredibly high number. Now, it's one game, so fluky things like that do happen. But if you take that, I think you can legitimately say that there were some, quote, bad luck things that happened to Indiana. Now, to an extent, you create your own luck. And Indiana deserved to lose that game based on the mistakes they made. But you can also look at it moving into this game as, well, you know, the Notre Dame team Michigan State beat apparently isn't very good. So while it's impressive to win in South Bend, maybe that doesn't mean near as much as we thought it did 2 weeks ago. The Wake Forest team that Indiana beat, or that Indiana lost to, I think might win 7 or 8 games, probably will win 7 or 8 games. Ball State appears to be better than people anticipated. And, you know, Notre Dame got it handed to them by Wisconsin. Or, I'm sorry, Michigan State got it handed to them by Wisconsin. So there's just so much unknown with both of these teams. I don't think either fan base really knows what they have right now with their teams, which is one of the things that makes this such an interesting matchup. You've got so many conflicting kind of narratives heading into it that you don't know what's what. So I'm interested to see kind of what happens on the field Saturday night, not just for the results of it, but kind of to give us more of a sample size to shape what we think about both of these teams, but in interest to us and our fans, to IU, obviously.
Definitely, and you know, you're playing for the Spittoon. It's something that, you know, D'Antonio says the team takes seriously all their trophy games. It is a trophy game, and it would be nice for IU to, you know, have that tangible piece of evidence for, a win over Michigan State. No matter what this Michigan State turns out to be, a win over them is monumental. You'll get a trophy back. It's another thing you could parade around with the bucket at alumni events, and it's something for the students to rally around. celebrate with in the crowd after the game if they win. So, you know, it's always dangerous for one side not to play up a rivalry, especially, you know, it's kind of like, I don't know, it's if you don't, if you take them, you can't take anybody lightly. And especially a team like Indiana, who's put a scare into a lot of people recently. So, you know, I expect a good game. I expect a good crowd to come out. And I really do. I feel a lot better about this week than I did last week against Wake Forest. So, you know, take that for whatever it's worth. But I do feel a lot better about this week. But let's move to our matchup to watch. It was written by Alex Compton. His matchup to watch was Tyler O'Connor against Marcus Oliver. I'm the leader of both units. Marcus Oliver's obviously a linebacker for Indiana, is the leader of that of their defense. And Tyler O'Connor is starting quarterback at Michigan State. And I think them playing off each other, O'Connor's not going to, you know, run for 1,000 yards, but keeping him in the pocket, making him uncomfortable, you know, forcing some throws by Oliver will, you know, set the tone for the game. And if you could, Indiana's defense could get a couple three and outs to start the game and build some confidence, I think that'll go a long way in terms of winning the game. If it goes the opposite way, where Tyler O'Connor takes, you know, the first two drives, first three drives, gets points on them, it'll build his confidence and give him control of the offense and allow them to do a lot more.
Well, yeah, 2 weeks ago he was really sharp against Notre Dame, and heading into the Wisconsin game, it was kind of a feeling of, well, Michigan State's got, you know, they've still got it. I don't know why anybody ever doubts them. They, you know, still got it. And then last week he was 18 for 38, had three interceptions. Wisconsin has a really good defense. So, yeah, it's hard to kind of know what we have with O'Connor at this point. But I think that it's fair to say he's capable of putting together a very nice game against Indiana's defense. He's capable of it. However, he also showed last week he's capable of making a lot of mistakes. They actually put in redshirt freshman Brian Wawerke. Mark D'Antonio insists O'Connor's still the guy at quarterback, and, you know, he should be. You're not gonna pull him at this point. But, you know, if he struggles, D'Antonio did mention that Wawerke's going to have his chance throughout the season. So, you know, he's kind of the heir apparent for them. So we'll see if kind of he struggles, and then you, like you said, if you can build confidence as a defense, kind of continue to place some doubt in the mind of the Michigan State offense, like, well, maybe we're not, you know, maybe we're not as good as we were. If they struggle for a second straight week to start out, you know, you can create some doubt there. But it's a team that has had a lot of offensive success against IU for the past few years. 540 yards of offense last season, 662 in 2014, 473 in 2013. So Indiana really has not been able to keep them in check. But, you know, we look at this Indiana defense, and I think it's undoubtable these guys are better than any Indiana defense we've seen recently. I think that they passed the eye test for that. The question is, how much better are they? And I don't think we know the answer to that yet. We're probably not going to know the answer to that for a little while, but this is the stiffest offensive test that Indiana has faced so far. This offense has more weapons than FIU. It has more weapons than Ball State, more than Wake Forest. You know, you're looking at their receivers, Donnie Corley, very good freshman. He looks the part of the highly touted recruit he was coming in. R.J. Shelton is capable. He's struggling a little bit with, you know, more attention, which he didn't have previously with some of the other receivers they've had that have departed for the NFL. But
yeah, and he's a guy
who's
they get the ball. Yeah, they get the ball to R.J. Shelton in a lot of different ways, especially on that.
Yeah.
Seems to be whenever I watch Michigan State, they're doing that jet sweep action to R.J. Shelton. And then you mentioned Josiah Price, who's been on our, you know, top five tight ends that IU's played. And this will be the third game in four games that IU has played a really good tight end. And, Johnny Smith week one, and Cam Saragne last week. So, you know, they're used to playing good tight ends, and this is, you know, where those linebackers, Tigre Scales has got to cover him, and he's a big weapon. And then, of course, you know, the running game with L.J. Scott and Gerald Holmes and Madre London there as well. While London hasn't gotten going, and L.J. Scott has struggled to be an explosive back, it looks like Gerald Holmes is their big play running back right now.
It's really weird. You know, both London and Holmes only got one carry last week. You know, Holmes shredded Notre Dame. He had over 100 yards, two touchdowns. Actually, I think he had exactly 100 yards and two touchdowns against Notre Dame on like 13 carries. L.J. Scott will get the most carries. He's kind of the bell cow for him. Gerald Holmes is considered kind of the big back, but he has made the most explosive plays of that group. It's really odd, kind of their running back carry distribution over these three games so far. I would have expected Holmes to get a lot more work last week against Wisconsin, particularly when their offense was struggling to find some answers. But he didn't really get it, so it'll be interesting to see what this defensive line for Indiana that's done a lot better than we expected so far. They really have. You have to give them credit so far. There were a lot of questions coming into it, and I think there are still some questions because it's, you know, it's just not an incredibly deep unit, and you're going to get worn down as the season goes on, particularly over the stretch of you know, 10 straight weeks of Power Conference games. But that's not a concern right now. That group is healthy right now, and they're playing pretty well. They'll get a pretty good challenge. I was not impressed with Michigan State's offensive line against Wisconsin, particularly the pass protection. Tyler O'Connor was under a lot of pressure, especially on third down, and I'm hoping to see Indiana stay aggressive on third downs when they get Michigan State into those situations, because the line didn't handle it well against Wisconsin, and O'Connor did not handle it well. It was a big reason why they fell behind was their struggles on third down. So Indiana has not allowed anyone to get higher than 3.7 yards a carry, and that was Ball State. And a lot of that came on kind of one run that, you know, was not a big play, but it was a longer run than what Ball State had the rest of the game. You know, Wake Forest only had 3.6 yards a carry, and they ran the ball a lot. So that was a pretty big sample size, and Indiana held them down. So I think the game plan is pretty obvious for Indiana. You limit the running game like you have so far this season with not let L.J. Scott, Gerald Holmes, and I'm not even sure Madre London is going to see much work, but not let those two guys get on track. And then you force Michigan State into some third and medium, third and long situations, pressure Tyler O'Connor, try to get to him without having to send too many on a blitz. You don't want to have to send more than one or two guys on a blitz and leave your coverage exposed. Force him into some decisions that Michigan State would rather not have him make. Make Tyler O'Connor make really good throws on third down to beat you. I think that's your defensive plan. And I'd be really disappointed if we have another offensive explosion for Michigan State in this series. I think you'll see the best defensive performance against Michigan State that we've seen from an IU team in a while. Granted, the bar's not very high there, but I don't think you'll see them putting up, you know, another 550 yards of offense on Indiana.
Yeah, and, you know, to go back to your defensive line analysis, you know, they've played all right. But they need to get pressure on the quarterback without blitzing.
Yeah.
And that's something that killed him against Wake Forest a little bit, in terms of letting John Walford sit back there for what seemed to be forever. And if you let Tyler O'Connor sit back there in the pocket, receivers are going to get open, no matter who's in the secondary. So I think, you know, trying to get these guys going, hopefully, you know, they could get more of a rush and more of a push up front. And when they do sack the quarterback, for the love of God, do not grab the face mask. You know, we've seen that twice this year, where sacks have come and the guy defender has grabbed the face mask. So I think making O'Connor uncomfortable in the pocket and getting pressure there will help out the defense without having to send Scales or A'shaun Riggins or Marcelino Bull off the edge on blitzes. Although if you get to the point where you're ahead by that much, you could take a few more risks and start blitzing people and bringing the heat. But you're right. I think, you know, it is a pretty straightforward game plan. You know, stop the run, make them throw the ball, and hope for the best. And, you know, if Indiana gives up over, 35 points a game, or 35 points this game, it'd be pretty disappointing. But, you know, it all comes down to how much pressure they could get on Tyler O'Connor and all of that and limiting turnovers from the IU offense. You know, running backs have to hold on to the ball, and Richard Lego has to throw it to the correct team. And when he does, he's usually pretty good. You know, over 1,000 yards, 7 touchdown passes. And Tyler O'Connor has 5 interceptions as well. Anyway, let's go to predictions. What's your prediction for the game?
Well, the easiest prediction that I can make will be that I actually know what IU is going to wear this time. So I'm not going to get that prediction wrong. We know that we're wearing pink for IU's annual pink day. So I'll get at least one thing right. My prediction for the outcome of the game, you know, with the uncertainty surrounding the health of IU's offensive line, I think that Bull is going to play for Michigan State. I think that's going to boost them. I expect Indiana to play pretty well, but I think Michigan State will give a really good performance also. Unfortunately, and I hope I'm wrong, I'll take the Spartans, and I'm going to go with 31-27. Indiana missing out on a couple of scoring chance opportunities where they get field goals instead of needed touchdowns.
All right. You know, TJ predictions, I was wrong last week. Barely decent on the first couple of weeks. But I feel better this week than I did about last week. It is the breast cancer awareness game. Whether they go with the pink decals or, as I've seen on some Facebook posts, pink helmets, I don't know. You know, they'll be wearing something pink. I think Indiana's going to pull this one out. I'll go, 31-28 with a late Griffin Oaks field goal to win it, and they bring back the Spittoon. And I have a good feeling. I think if Feeney and Camille are back, you're going to see Kameon Patrick a little bit more in terms of being a part of the offense. You hope Cole Guest is back. I think that pushes them over the top. Michigan State, it's about time they lose 2 in a row. I think coming in, Indiana might be more upset and angry and ready to take it out on this team that has owned them for the past, 7 or 8 games since 2006. So it's a night game. I know there's I-Corps midterms, which I think is poor planning on IU's part. I get that it's school and that comes first. But having tests at 8 o'clock on a Saturday night, I understand the reasons for it. But, I think that takes away some of the students. But hopefully the rest of the students who are not taking a test to come back and make some noise. It's a unique game. You don't get many primetime Big Ten games in Bloomington. under the lights. The weather is supposed to be spectacular. It's going to be cooler, so you won't be melting to the bleachers. And, you know, it's 31-28. I think Legault fixes his turnover issues. The defense plays well enough, gets a few takeaways, and they fix up the special teams mishaps and kick a field goal to win it.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly hope your outcome's right. I think we're in line and in agreement that we're expecting a pretty good performance from Indiana on Saturday. Whether or not they win or lose, I'm expecting a pretty good performance. And my outlook on the season will change if we don't get that. If they come out and lay an egg on Saturday after the way that they lost on against Wake Forest, then my outcome for the season, my outlook for the season changes at least somewhat, you know, but hopefully we don't have to deal with that. And, you know, a win on Saturday would really be huge. It would erase the Wake Forest loss, and I think would really be a huge positive for the program. So I'd love to be talking about that on Monday. We'll have, you know, continuing coverage this week. We'll have game day coverage, like you said, the tailgate, and then the game on Saturday. I'll get the article recapping the game right up after it's over, and then we'll do our recap podcast, and you'll have your wrap and reaction. We'll have numbers that matter, and then we'll do our post-game pod on Monday at noon, and then move on to, well, yeah, we'll deal with the next opponent after this game.
Yeah, we'll get to Ohio State when we have to. But
yeah.
Anyway, thanks for joining us, TJ. I have a good feeling about this week. You know, fans should take that for what it's worth. But thanks for joining us.
So we blame
us.
You.
If it goes and yeah, you always blame me. So
yep.
You know, just blame me for everything. People blame me for Kofi Hughes leaving early, even though his eligibility was up. So anyway. Come hang out at the Hoosier Huddle tailgate. Thanks for joining us on the podcast, and we look forward to Saturday as always. Have a good one.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I want to tell you a story. It's a story about a scandal, broken relationships, gossip, rumors, money, corporate rivalry, and a broom. A performance-enhancing broom. My name is John Cullen. I'm a comedian, podcaster, and for 20 years, I was a semi-professional curler. And I want to tell you the story about how a single broom almost imploded the 500-year-old sport of curling.
We felt like we were bringing a knife to a gunfight.
It's the story of a superstar and his fall from grace.
Well, I was being dragged through the mud.
It's the story of two brother entrepreneurs with a dream.
Yeah, I said, that's great news.
It's a story of intrigue.
I still don't understand why we want to keep his name secret.
The full story has never been told, so I'm going to tell it. Broomgate, how a broom almost killed curling.
It was a year I'd like to forget.
To listen to Broomgate, search for Broomgate in your favorite podcast app. That's all one word, Broomgate.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
I normally find bras to be so uncomfortable and constricting, but Skims has changed that. You know I love Skims underwear, so I finally tried their bras, and Skims has delivered again. Skims bras are worth the hype for the amazing shape and support they give, but what I wasn't expecting was how comfortable they are too. I've tried so many bras in the past, and the main issue that I have is that they weren't supportive enough, to the point where they felt slouchy. I love my Skims wireless form bra because it's so comfortable and supportive. The older I get, the more I care about actually being comfortable in what I wear every day. And with my wireless form bra, I no longer have to sacrifice my comfort for the support I need. Shop Skims bras at skims.com, now available in 62 sizes, 30A to 46H. Plus, get free shipping on all orders over $75. If you haven't yet, be sure to let them know we sent you. After you place your order, select podcast in the survey and select our show in the drop-down menu that follows.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader, like that car riding your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.